Despite President Obama's calls for a world without nuclear weapons, a few contradictions have popped up in the U.S. Department of Energy's new budget for our nuclear arsenal. On today's first underreported segment, we will look at a few of those contradictions with William Hartung. He's director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Glad to be here.
And before we get started, I'd like to play a clip of President Obama speaking about nuclear weapons in Prague last month. Let's take a listen.
So today, I state clearly and with conviction, America's commitment to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons.
And then the Department of Energy released its fiscal year budget for 2010. How much money does it allocate to the United States' various nuclear weapons programs?
Well, $6.4 billion, which in the context of the bailouts we've been seeing is not a lot, but in the context of the regular budget is quite substantial.
So it's an increase over last year?
Well, yes. It's larger than the Bush budget, and particularly more money for construction, including some new facilities.
Constructing facilities to do what?
Well, to design and build nuclear weapons in the future, 10, 20, 30, maybe 50 years from now.
Isn't the National Security Administration, which is part of the Department of Energy, also proposing a major upgrade to the nation's nuclear weapons complex?
Well, if they had their way, there'd be a gigantic increase, $175 billion over the next two decades, to build scores of new facilities, to have a possibility of building thousands of nuclear weapons, at the same time that the president is saying we need to get rid of these things.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand. If we're phasing out nuclear weapons, and he said, I want to state this clearly and with conviction that we want to phase them out. Why are we talking about building so much, all these new weapons production facilities?
Well, I think there's two aspects. One is some of this is a hangover from the Bush years, and I think the administration hasn't got down into the weeds and sort of extracted those things yet. I think the other is kind of this Dr. Strangelove approach of, you know, God forbid we run out of mine shafts to hide in after a nuclear war. It's like we need the flexibility in case the arms race pops up again.
Where is most of the United States nuclear arsenal built?
Well, it's spread out across the country, but there's weapons labs in New Mexico, in California. There's an assembly plant in Amarillo, Texas. There's Oak Ridge, Tennessee, refines the uranium. There's eight facilities altogether and larger than any other country's complex by a large margin.
Should I assume that major defense contractors are doing most of this work?
Well, Lockheed Martin runs the Sandia laboratories. Countries like Bechtel are involved at Los Alamos. Babcock and Wilcox, a combination of companies in the nuclear industry and the big weapons contractors.
And would they stand to benefit from the construction of these newly proposed sites?
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, the biggest lobby is the weapons labs because they can bring the scientists to bear saying, you know, God forbid we fall behind. Let's just make sure by having this capability to build more and more for indefinite future.
And we're talking about new warheads?
Well, there was several proposals to build a robust nuclear earth penetrator, a reliable replacement warhead, all kinds of acronym-itis spreading throughout the National Security Agency. But Congress has blocked those so far. So basically now they're down to the idea of, well, let's at least have the capacity to build them in the future.
But hasn't Congress been part of this whole thing? Because when people have talked about cutting back on arms buildups, congressmen say, well, you know, this is going to mean jobs in my district or my state.
Well, that's been the biggest obstacle. What's interesting now is Robert Gates has talked about eliminating eight different weapon systems. So this will be a big test for the arms lobby, whether they can basically roll the defense secretary or whether he gets what he wants.
Although we have this odd situation where Robert Gates is in favor of keeping funding for the reliable replacement warhead in place. And the budget, another contradiction, zeroes out funds for that line of weapons.
Well, I guess in this case, I'm glad he's not getting what he wants. But I think his ideology about nuclear weapons is quite different from the president's.
So does this represent these contradictions? Do they represent some kind of a battle that's going on within the administration?
Well, I think it's the bureaucracy against the president. To turn this thing around, you've got to dig deep. You've got to get at the nuclear planners, the nuclear targeting people, the people who build these things. And you've really got to sort of remake those institutions. And I'm hoping that this is what's happening, that there's just a little bit of a lag between the president's commitments and the changes inside the bureaucracy.
Who appointed that bureaucracy?
Well, the weapons complex is still run by a Bush appointee, and there's some hope that when he's replaced, this contradiction between building new weapons facilities and saying you want to get rid of nuclear weapons may be undone.
But wouldn't, whether a person is a Bush appointee or an Obama appointee, wouldn't he be at the service of the current president?
Well, ideally. And to his credit, Obama has said, I'm not going to build this new warhead. He's put more money into nonproliferation activities, but he hasn't gotten down to this level. And I think it's a big problem if he really wants to fulfill his pledge to have a world without nuclear weapons.
Well, it could be argued that this Spendy initiative is part of an economic stimulus package.
Well, I think the problem with that is that almost any other form of spending creates more jobs than military spending. And so if you want to keep money in that sort of dead-end spending, you're giving up the possibility of investing in things that have a ripple effect throughout the economy.
My guest on today's Underreported, where we're talking about nuclear facility spending increases, is William Hartung of the New American Foundation. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Thomas D'Agostino is the acting administrator for the National Nuclear Security Administration. Is he a Bush appointed?
Yes. He's left over from the Bush years, and he's crafted this argument that says no matter what size the nuclear arsenal, if it's 2,000, if it's zero, we need the same size nuclear weapons complex. So his sort of institutional loyalties are quite clear.
I'm not sure I understand what that means. The exact quote was that whether we have a stockpile of zero weapons or a stockpile of thousands of weapons, that we will need this new multi-billion-dollar uranium processing facility.
Well, it's the sort of twisted logic that once you enter into it, it's very hard to come out again. It's sort of like going down the rabbit hole. But basically, his argument is if 10, 20, 30 years from now, the current weapons are quote-unquote unreliable, which means, you know, God forbid you try to blow up the world and you only blow up two-thirds of it. Therefore, we need these facilities to sort of tweak, adjust, redesign nuclear warheads.
And hasn't his agency argued that constructing these new facilities could produce long-term savings?
Well, yes, which has never happened in the history of the agency. But the idea is, well, we'll spend $6, $8, $10 billion now, and we'll save on energy efficiency and having smaller places to guard. So basically, in fact, they want to run in the Amarillo plant using wind power. So it's going to be the first ecologically sound nuclear weapons assembly plant in the world.
But still, I don't know why that strikes me as funny. The National Nuclear Security Administration has a history of cost overruns. I wonder what happens when the wind doesn't blow.
Well, thankfully that plant is mostly disassembling weapons now. So actually, I guess that would be a bad thing if there's some sort of weather upsurge that cuts down on the wind.
Now, why would there be cost overruns? Because this is a fairly predictable kind of science, isn't it?
Well, they're not doing anything dramatically new, although every once in a while they decide they have to build a big new gizmo, like this thing called the National Ignition Facility, which is going to have the world's largest laser. That's six times what it cost when they designed it. And yet the Department of Energy recently gave a management award to the people who created that cost overrun. So there's definitely kind of a disconnect between the management of the Energy Department and the reality of the results of their activities.
We often read about how the people who serve in these various agencies earlier worked for defense contractors. Is that the case here as well?
Well, yes. In fact, Everett Boeckner, who was the prior administrator, worked for the Lockheed Martin Corporation. Now, what's interesting is now that he's out of the agency, he says, this is crazy. We don't need this new uranium facility. We don't need this new plutonium facility. We don't need a new facility in Kansas City to make the non-nuclear parts of nuclear weapons. So a lot of times when people step outside of the bureaucracy, their vision is much clearer.
But should we even be concerned? Because if Barack Obama is opposed, and right now what sounds to me like renegade holdovers are pushing all of this, it's unlikely to go anywhere.
Well, I think the test will be next year's budget. You know, will the bureaucrats sell him on this idea that we need the flexibility to build weapons later? Or will he say, you know, why do we want to have the capability when it's going to make us look like hypocrites to the rest of the world?
Why are our nuclear weapons programs handled by the Department of Energy rather than the Pentagon?
Well, there's a history going back to the Atomic Energy Commission, then the Energy Research and Development Agency, and then under Carter, when they created the Department of Energy, they basically put all the energy programs with the nuclear energy programs, which also included the nuclear weapons programs.
Concern also that if the military controls them, it'll be more reckless than if civilians control them?
Well, certainly it'll be more secretive. And so a lot of the things that Congress has been able to do, like block these new warheads, would be much more difficult because a much smaller number of members of Congress would have access to the right information.
Although there was a proposal recently to move control of nuclear warhead production to the Department of Defense.
Yes. The administration is studying that. And a lot of the activists and analysts who are trying to stop this buildup would rather keep it where it is than see it sort of fall into the huge bureaucracy of the Pentagon.
What are we talking about here? The United States has about 2,700 warheads deployed with 2,500 in operational reserve. How does that number compare to the rest of the world's nuclear arsenal?
Well, the United States, along with Russia, controls about 96-97% of the world's nuclear arsenal. So basically, unless the United States and Russia take the lead, no other country is going to make a move in terms of either nuclear weapons or aspiring for nuclear weapons.
Well, we have 5,200 of these warheads. How many does Russia have?
Well, Russia has a lot of old tactical weapons sitting around. The United States has some that don't count within that 5,200. So it's really a question of sort of going across the board and getting the tactical, the strategic, the ones that are sitting around that could be reassembled.
Well, we used to hear during the Cold War about missile superiorities and deterrence capacity. How many nuclear warheads do you think the United States really would need to act as an effective deterrent? I would think 10, 20, not 5,200.
No. I mean, some experts say possibly a few hundred, and that's assuming nobody else reduces from current levels. So there's going to be talks between the United States and Russia starting next week. I would hope they'd go down to 1,500 or even beyond that as the first step towards getting rid of them altogether.
Aren't there also 4,200 nuclear weapons in the United States awaiting disassembly? How difficult a process is it to take these weapons apart?
Well, the real problem is they have these plutonium pits, which have to be stored somewhere. And plutonium has an incredibly long half-life. But the actual undoing of the bomb, it's really a capacity problem. Thankfully, disassembling more than they've been building over the last 20 years.
Can weapons-grade uranium be repurposed?
Well, there's a danger if someone got a hold of it, they could make some sort of simple nuclear device or just use it in a radiation bomb that would contaminate a large part of a major city.
Now, USA Today reported on Wednesday that the government faces a 15-year backlog of warheads already waiting to be dismantled. And according to a study by the NRDC and the National Federation of Scientists, the Bush administration dismantled the fewest warheads per year since the Eisenhower era. Was that a matter of policy?
I think in some degree it was, because the Bush strategy was kind of a hedge strategy, to have weapons in reserve that could be put back on deployment more or less on demand. So if you get rid of that policy, you need to step up the disassembly of the warheads, which probably means, doubling the facility or somehow, more capacity to do that, which I think is the only part of the weapons complex that probably should be expanded.
Now, where would these weapons be a deterrent? North Korea? Iran?
Well, it's interesting since
Pakistan, India?
Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons yet. Korea would basically risk the destruction of their entire society.
One bomb
to
would do
them.
It, wouldn't it?
Or U.S. conventional power. They're really quite limited as a conventional military power. So India and Pakistan are mostly concerned with each other. China and Russia, for the most part, there's an understanding from the Cold War that using these things against each other would be insane. So it's really the doctrine has to be changed. The notion that we need these things to protect our allies from a possible strike I think that has to be abandoned if we're going to get to zero.
And you mentioned that President Obama and Russian President Dmitry Medvedev have both expressed interest in making deep cuts to the existing nuclear arsenals. But do you think that those kinds of cuts are possible given what we're seeing in the current Department of Energy budget?
Well, I think if you get the numbers down in terms of deployed warheads, the absurdity of this notion of building more facilities will become more obvious. And I'm hoping then the administration will be either persuaded or come to the decision itself to stop funding these things.
The United Nations is looking to strengthen the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Do you think the treaty needs a major overhaul?
Well, I think a couple things. They need better inspection. And, you know, the interesting thing is the entire International Atomic Energy Agency gets about $400 million a year. If you took some of this money from building new facilities, you could double their ability to inspect whether countries are violating the treaty or countries outside the treaty were trying to get weapons.
Although the United States maintains a voluntary ban on nuclear testing, we haven't signed that non-proliferation treaty, have we?
Well, the biggest problem is the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, which President Obama is going to try to get ratified. But he's got to bring along seven or eight Republicans, and in this climate, that's going to be heavy lifting politically.
Now, why is it? Why is Congress opposed?
Well, there's kind of a Republican antipathy towards any kind of arms treaty. President Bush rolled back the anti-ballistic missile treaty. Even the agreement he made with Russia was sort of an executive agreement instead of a formal treaty. So it's, I would say, primarily an ideological sort of isolationist instinct.
Well, we're talking about, as you said earlier, needing more nuclear weapons to fight in 20 or 30 years, and we have 5,200 or so right now. I would think that if we dropped all 5,200, there would be nobody alive on the planet right now.
Well, that's correct.
Or even in 20 or 30 years. If global warming doesn't get us, those nuclear bombs will.
It sort of comes back to this sort of issue of, well, you know, God forbid some of them lose their potency. And I think that's crazy. I mean, there's really, as you said, a very small number of them would pretty much end life as we know it.
Well, you sound reasonable, and I'm sure you've spoken to people in positions of power. How do they respond?
Well, you know, usually there's a combination of, well, you'd understand better, Bill, if you were in our position, if you knew the classified information.
We've heard that story before.
Well, yes. It's sort of an attempt to really – it's almost short-circuiting democracy. We're the only ones who know, so therefore citizens have no right to have input.
We heard the same thing before we invaded Iraq, didn't we, if you knew what we knew?
Well, yes. And I was one of the ones who said, I know enough to know that this doesn't make sense. But unfortunately, after the fact, the fact that you were right really has very little consolation given the, you know, the destruction and the great cost that's resulted.
William Hartung is the director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. Thank you so much for talking with us on today's Underreported.
Thanks a lot.